Good morning. Today is Monday, July the 5th. Hope everybody's enjoying their three-day weekend. We are attempting to.
Absolutely.
That means that this one is recorded. We don't say that too often. You know, and that would be what would screw up with a studio camera. We've had some people want, oh, and stream the show and have a camera in there. Really?
As long as I'm not the one here, that actually would be kind of cool, I think, from time to time. Yeah. Guess,
so you can monitor and make sure I'm here, huh? Yeah. the streets are safe until now.
So you're in your bathrobe at home with your slippers on and a nice mic.
Yeah, I know. I don't think so. All righty, smart guy. Are you ready for our question?
No.
All right. Why is one who bluffs called a four-flusher?
You know, that's a great question, and I'm just going to have to tell you something. I'm very disappointed. I looked at the wrong...
you cheated in the wrong
area. I tried to cheat while you were out of the room getting my beverage, and I could talk about beaver lodges.
No, that was
that was already done.
That was Hansel. Yeah. All right. It has nothing to do with toilets, which would be what my smart guy response would have been. Somebody in the public outhouse would be a four-flusher.
Does that have something to do with poker?
It does. In poker, a flush is a very good hand consisting of five cards of the same suit. Sometimes a player who has four cards of the same suit showing and a fifth card facing down will pretend that the face-down card is also of the same suit, which would make it a flush.
Right.
Okay. If the face-down card is, in fact, not of the same suit, and if the player succeeds in driving the other players out of the game with a bluff, then the player will have won the hand with a four-card flush. A person who does this is called a
four-flusher.
Four-flusher. In general, use of the term means one who can put up any sort of bluff.
Interesting.
Yeah. But you knew about the poker thing, huh?
No, I'm not a gambler, Brian.
Apparently not successful, huh?
Well, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh. Or am I?
Yeah. There you go. All right, we're getting in the spirit of things here. New budget year?
Yes.
I suppose the initial question is, were there any new laws going into effect with the new fiscal year at the state level?
You see a lot of those with the new calendar year becoming effective, right?
But nothing of significance in law.
Not off the top of my head.
All right.
I mean, there's so much going on, so much change right now, not just in the arena of proposed police reform. But, right. I mean, especially in a state like California.
Yeah.
You could
yeah.
stack all our law books up to higher than the tallest building in Eureka.
Now, that currently.
Currently, right.
Boy, you got really close there. Yeah. And I'm sure we're going to get there. Budget. We're hearing surpluses. Everybody had some extra monies, et cetera, et cetera. Did you experience any increase in your budget?
Yes, modest. Just a little backstory here. Obviously, Eureka was in a very tough place a year and a half or so ago when we were looking at the budget and forming the 2020-21 budget, a combination of not a lot in reserves, some extra unexpected very large expenditures, and projected economic hits from the coronavirus pandemic.
Well, and don't forget the retirement plan.
Right. Well, that's always
funded, unfunded.
Right.
That's a big ogre that nobody talks about right now.
Well, yeah. And there's the plan to deal with that. And in a few years, we're going to hit a place where those payments start going down. It's just getting there. But, you know, just the state of the economy, the economic forecast, very, very poor. Eureka already wasn't in a strong place. And so, of course, the city, you know, 10 to 12 and something percent. Budget cuts citywide, very tough. In fact, EPD lost six positions. And then a lot's changed in the last year. Measure H is huge. In fact, I was just driving on the way here, ran through a very nicely paved section of town off of 14th, paid for Measure H.
Until you hit the bottom of the hill there, and then it goes back to four tracks.
This is my story, Brian.
Yeah.
Story.
Well, that's the road that I use as a main back and forth because I don't like driving in front of the house all the time.
I saw some trucks down there. They might be working on it.
What? Oh, really?
Right.
From
yeah.
there to west?
Well, they might. They're in the dip. I don't know what they're doing.
What side?
They were on the
paved,
west side.
The paved side?
Yes.
Yeah, fine. Probably striping or something.
But Measure H has been huge and will provide the city a level of financial stability and the ability to finally play catch up to a lot of deferred maintenance and other issues, and so that's been an amazingly positive thing for the city already.
When there was projections on that, was there any discussion that people are going to change their buying habits? I can use Schaefer's as an example because Jack owns both. You got Schaefer's in the city of Eureka, you got Schaefer's half a street outside.
I don't know what level of analysis would look like that. I can tell you as a consumer, that wouldn't be enough to make a difference for me.
Except on large purchases.
Yeah, maybe if you were buying a car, you might think about it. But then it's like what's up here. You have so many options, so many dealerships. You know, what kind of incentives can the dealers offer? It would depend. But that's where you really see.
But then the business has to take it the hit rather than the city. I mean, it's just interesting. You know, everything's all rosy. And we forget some of the basics.
Well, but I think some of that kind of thinking probably has went into the formation of the 2021-22 budget in terms of, you know, being moderate, balanced. We still haven't had, you know, we're going to have a full year of Measure H coming up, you know. And so I think is it July 1st where you start to the next end of the fiscal period or whatever, where you get a full year worth of revenue reports to look at,
Yeah, so you're feeling okay. Now, you said you were down 5. Was that not funded to backfill positions that were vacant? Or did you have to lay officers off or staff off?
We didn't have to lay anybody off, so we were fortunate. So it was 6 positions, a senior dispatcher, a property technician, and 4 sworn officers. So the golden handshake, as they call it, early retirement incentive for one officer and detective. We had 2 vacancies already, so they just unallocated those. Vacancy and dispatch, unallocated that, and actually the property technician also left to work down south. So we were able to use
existing vacancies. So you kind of froze positions and had to.
Right. Now, the interesting part of this is there was hiring freeze, obviously, that we all needed to do in 2020, 21 budget. And unfortunately, you know, we're kind of in a very difficult place right now with our staffing in Eureka. Lots developed just in a couple of months with the department, and so we're having to work hard to try to avoid going into emergency staffing mode. One other thing I just wanted to add real quick with the economy. The other positive thing beyond Measure H was the forecast is vastly improved. You know, that just the numbers have come in much higher. The economy is doing pretty well in this state and even here locally, and so the revenues are much higher than anticipated. So a combination of those things, and I think some smart fiscal management, has put the city in a good position. At the same time, they're not going on a spending spree right now.
KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It is 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka Police Chief Steve Watson. Steve, you made references a couple of times in the first segment about things going on in the department over the last 3 or 4 months. Obviously, you've got the one situation that, what do you call it, the texting? I don't know.
It's referred to by some as the texting scandal or the texting incident.
Well, scandal. To me, that's a different definition, but okay.
That's just what you hear used out there by some people.
Okay. What has that done for the staff? I mean, is it like, you goofballs and that kind of a thing? Or is it more concerning and more not systemic concern?
Yeah. So I'm only going to speak in a very broad sense, obviously, because this is still a continuing investigation, though we're getting closer to having it wrapped up. But we're still in the middle of it. But I think locally we've built up a good enough goodwill and demonstrated the community enough over the last several years, the positive changes that have been made and the good excellent work that the men and women at EPD do here, that we've been able to weather this trust issue for the most part. Obviously, there's some people that don't feel that way right now, and we're going to have to prove ourselves. But for the most part, we have a lot of supporters, and it's much appreciated. But certainly it's raised questions, you know, as wherever this story has played, about not only policing in general, naturally in the current climate, but also just the questions that a reporter originally raised that doesn't know the department in the area, but asked, does this represent a larger cultural issue, not only in policing, but in the department? So certainly that, you know, I don't want to be naive and put my head in the sand. I have my own feelings about that because I know the people in the department very well. I see the changes that have been made. And the answer I would give is no, but we have work to do still. And we're going to take as deep of a dive as we need to make sure that there are any latent issues, that we identify them, we get them fixed, and that this doesn't happen again.
It's got to be a challenging situation, you know, when you've got one side of any argument saying we're supposed to be blind to take your pick, everything, right? People are people, that's it, it's over. And then you've got others that will take a position and want to have some entity, some group, treated specially, extra special in some situations. How do you balance those two realities at the same time, because they're so diametrically opposed? It's like having the race card played at the national level. And you go, well, I thought we were supposed to be blind, and yet we use this for special funding. We use this for special designation. We use this as a lever towards something, a goal that I, as an individual, may or may not have. How do you balance it? Because you guys are supposed to be blind also. Well, not functionally blind, but blind to all of those different things. It doesn't matter if they're young, old, tall, short, fat, skinny, black, white, whatever. Everybody is supposed to be a body. And that's how do you do that one?
Well, you know, we're dealing with human beings, both within policing agencies and obviously in the community, from the activists to business owners, everyone, obviously. And, you know, so we all have, you know, implicit biases we have to be aware of. Many people have passion projects or certain groups or things that they feel very, very strongly about. And let's face it, oftentimes their thinking and the actions and their words ultimately are geared towards those agendas that sure. We have. And, you know, but it is absolutely true in public service and nowhere else more so than in policing, that we really have to police equally for everyone. And, you know, that has to be the
goal. I would think it would be an overt effort not to. Yeah, unless, okay.
We're not going to treat one group different than another group. We're not going to give one person or group a certain level of service, not the other. You have to go into it, you know, with a sense of equity and equality. And,
but you've also got experience. So if this is the 15th time you've gone to this address for the same event.
Well, that's different.
You'd be crazy not to go in anticipating this is number 16.
Yeah, that's different, though. You know, that's kind of situational specific.
To me,
it doesn't matter the color of that person's skin,
no,
their gender, their religious beliefs, you know,
none
any
of
those
stuff
things.
Is in play.
It's the behavior that the policing often focuses on. It's the nature of the business. So if someone's breaking the law, you know, we have a duty to do something about that.
Right.
And the more serious that is, then obviously the higher our duty and the more decisive our actions need to be. And that's independent of any of these things, political affiliations or any of that.
Political affiliations, that's entering into it now too?
Oh, that wouldn't surprise me at some point. But you know, again,
I'm
just
an
in
American
terms of
independent
policing,
by God, and you're picking on me?
We have to be apolitical at work. And because, again, people feel very strongly about their political beliefs. And so we can't be seen as a department favoring, you know, Democrats over Republicans or vice versa, or you know, independents. We just can't do that. We need to do our job. In our private lives, we'll have our opinions. We'll vote the way we're going to vote.
Is that a change?
maybe looking at the history of policing at times, it was very political. And spent major cities like New York and Boston, you know.
Okay, yeah, historical, but what was that? I mean, my understanding was it wasn't that the laws were different. It was that the people that were enforcing the laws had different perspectives and were allowed to execute or to follow those.
Well, there's strict laws now. I can't go changes. In uniform and engage in political activity.
Right. You can't.
Or
it can
be against the law.
Well, you can go to a political rally, but you have to be on the line.
Well, I'm there on duty, because of
right.
my political
right.
viewpoint, but because I have a job to do. Same like a polling station.
Did that come from some of that historical stuff, or did that come out of case law?
Probably a case law comes from often historical situations.
Yeah. Well, at least we're not in Chicago and we're not in New York, so we're okay, sort of. It's 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka Police Chief Steve Watson. Steve, I've had occasion, and I think we've talked about it in the past. I know I talked about it with some of your predecessors, about putting those little cameras up on the signal lights and filming those people so when they blow through the intersections after the reds, boom, there's the ticket. Or speeding, boom, there's the ticket. I know you're in a spot that's tough because of not having enough bodies to have some of the traffic guys around that you'd like to have. Why not go electronic? Is it a dollars and cents issue? Is it a philosophical issue? Is it a union issue? Is it a willingness of city leadership?
Yeah, it's not a union issue. I think, one, you need to look at the data, the empirical evidence. How effective are they? Are they worth the cost? Who monitors those cameras? Who does the follow-up? A lot of it is actually automated, so it may not even have to involve the police department. Traffic engineering would certainly be a part of any kind of program like that.
Sure.
They already do adjustments with the lights and different things that would be up their alley. And if it's on the 101 corridor, Broadway, 4th, 5th, through the city, that's a Caltrans issue on top of that.
I'm thinking HI. We talked about at 14th, at Booner. In Henderson Center, the areas that you're responsible. F Street now, I guess Tom is going to be getting it. I know that's in the county, but Tom's going to be getting his signal light there at Grant School. There are key areas where people tend to blow through the intersections or go way too fast.
H and 7th, big problem spot.
Why not just 6th. Automate this thing? I know there's ongoing maintenance, but it's less than having an entire traffic squadron out there. And whether or not that camera is being monitored actively, or it's a random, like kind of like the IRS with the taxi, if you're there, or if we get a call that at maybe next week at 4 o'clock this afternoon somebody blew through this intersection going really fast, you call it up. It doesn't require a cop to do that. You can have one of your tech guys.
I'm sure cost has been a factor at times because some of those systems can be expensive, especially if you want remote monitoring, which could have some value. But I know they've had discussions about this. It's been a while. I'd be curious to see where those landed and why maybe a more comprehensive camera system hasn't been installed in terms of, we're talking traffic now, not like the license plate readers and surveillance cameras that someday I would like to see after working with the public and being transparent about this at the major entrances and exits. Well, it's a privacy rights thing to many people. And most people...
But it's in place in so many jurisdictions in the state of California already. I would think that that had already been proven. Right. It's like, guys, we're going to do this because of public safety, and here's why.
I believe, and I did actually as a captain research the cost of those, and I think we're getting much more closer to where it could be affordable now. Technology is improving, some costs are coming down. But I still think it's important when you start to roll out programs like that to be transparent, engage the community. And I believe most in the community would support it. They would see the public safety benefits. But you look at San Diego, years ago they rolled out their smart street lights and technological marvels, right? These things, they measured humidity and temperature and all these things, and the lights could change and adjust and all this. Well, they forgot, the city forgot to tell their citizens that, oh, by the way, many of these cameras have lights have surveillance cameras attached. Well, it became a huge privacy rights issue and a lot of drama, a lot of time having to back up and, hey, we're sorry, mea culpa or whatever, and go back and engage the community.
Privacy because they weren't noticed, or people breaking the law got mad that they got caught?
Well, actually, how this came to light was there was a shooting or a murder at a business, and the cops used, they found out about the cameras that were installed because they weren't involved in the process either, and used it to solve the murder. As it went through court, it became public knowledge. The public had an outcry because they were never told that an extensive surveillance system had been installed in their city under these smart street lights.
So kind of like a Big Brother syndrome.
Yeah, and so and maybe if the city had engaged proactively with stakeholders and groups through this process, it wouldn't have been a thing. But it was the way that it was done and the lack of communication. I'm not going to repeat that in the city of Eureka.
Well, sure. I mean, and hopefully people won't find out about it because somebody gets shot.
Yeah, well, that too. Yeah.
But, you know, you look at the pressures that you have from the community, people wanting the speed laws and the stop signs and all that stuff not to be recommendations or suggestions, but actual occurrences. Okay. The lack of jail facility. Okay. The backlog that is there. You know, I tend to think that most people operate on the impact of their personal finances. Okay, so if speeding through Eureka suddenly became $1,000 minimum fine, not stopping at stoplights became a $800 fine, texting was a $2,000 fine.
There are rules and laws about how fines are created attached, so they don't go into basically like cruel and unusual punishment level.
But looking at that, all of a sudden you're going to get the compliance. You know, it's not do the nice thing, because if people were sensitive to that, they'd be doing it already. So how do you crank it up without spending $500,000 or whatnot with the advertising of these items or of hiring people to take care of this stuff?
You know, it's not my area of expertise into exactly how fines and fees are set, other than at the local level. We can create a municipal code within certain ranges, attach fees, but some of these state law violations may be prescribed by law at a certain level with what you can attach. The penalties are prescribed by the law.
Yeah, I figure you couldn't make your retirement plan.
But we have a traffic safety committee that was just formed again to deal with particularly the pedestrian versus vehicle collisions. You know, drivers running over pedestrians, especially along the 101 corridor. Maybe they will explore some of the things you just suggested, such as, you know, can adjustments be made to the punitive side of things? What about installing these cameras? You know, working with Caltrans along 101 and you know, then educating the public. The three E's, education, enforcement, and engineering. Yeah.
Notice how you put engineering last.
There's no particular order.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 844.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. Hopefully everybody's enjoying a sane afterglow. What is the law about firing off? That's just, yeah, the legal fireworks tonight, tomorrow, year and a half from now. Is all that okay?
Well, they call them safe and sane.
Yeah, I know.
But the reality is they're not always used in the safe and sane manner.
Well, true.
Yeah. You know, our biggest concerns, obviously in the Old Town District, zero fireworks. There's a good reason for that. You know, that's a tinderbox.
And
a lot
any
of
time
old
of the
buildings.
Year.
Any time of the year, period. No fireworks.
Sparklers?
No fireworks in Old Town.
Is a sparkler a firework?
Yes.
Okay, and the smoke pots
they get
are
like
fireworks?
1,800 degrees.
Well, I've never really put
just
it
throw
in
one of those up on top of a roof.
Or try to cook a hot dog with it.
Well, maybe you should after this.
Try a hot dog.
It's a holiday.
Yeah.
Come on. What are you doing here? Why am I here?
Yeah. Okay, so certain districts are permanently not usable for fireworks.
Well, that's the primary one. The illegal fireworks, the aerial stuff, exploding
those
stuff.
Those are all over the place.
Yeah, it can actually be a serious felony for possession and use of those as well. But they are dangerous. I mean, there was a video from last year. One of our officers almost got blown up. He's responding to a house, and they fire it off, and it goes off right by him. And it's been a real concern. It's understandable. They're loud. They're obnoxious. They scare animals.
Well, they start fires.
You remember somebody had his hand blown off.
Oh, yeah, the football
girl,
player?
Oh,
yeah, and the guy local.
Yeah, local guy. I mean, no illegal fireworks.
It is like dynamite. I mean, that's kind of what's in there.
Well, there are a certain couple of the legal ones that you could hit with a hammer and a certain, never mind, I shouldn't be afraid.
I see.
You can only get it to work occasionally as a kid.
Watson family tradition. I thought cap guns were a big deal, you know, having the caps and then with the stone on the cap. Yeah, that to me was about as exciting as I got around that stuff. Always disappointed with the smoke pots, though.
Yeah.
You know, those little
right
things.
Yeah.
It's like, why bother?
Yeah, well, now as the father and adult, I think of who's going to clean this mess up afterwards and how long am I going to...
Yep. Yeah.
Hey, so going back to the budget just real quick.
Sure.
I know we're running out of time, but so the budget process actually, from my perspective, was pretty smooth this year. We were able to get some funding back into some line item areas, which was great. And council did vote to give us one of the six unallocated positions back as a starting place this fiscal year. And that's a sworn officer position, really with the intent to, when we can, restaff CSET with a park waterfront ranger that also would work closely with the homeless and service providers and the mentally ill.
That program really worked out well, didn't it?
CSET is amazing. But right now they're done. Dennis Gagnon, our ranger, just amazing, amazing person, did a great job for us. He just retired or is about to retire. And so we've got some vacancies on
Why'd
the CSET
tell him
team.
No?
I tried, but he's got a place already out of state and they're looking forward to the next chapter. Yeah, and his wife, Tracy, amazing. She's our digital evidence tech. It's really a big blow for the department and the community because they're just good people and have done a great job.
Well, and who brings
protecting.
Potato salad for the picnics?
I don't eat potato salad, so that's not on my list of worries.
Okay. Yeah. Gets back to hot dogs and sparklers, huh?
Right.
Yeah. So having that position filled, is that a unique personality that
absolutely.
Do that slot?
It's got to be the right person with the right qualities that gets what the mission of the community safety engagement team is, dealing with the mentally ill and the homeless and, you know, the incorporating.
So is it a cop or
yeah,
is it somebody
else?
Well, yeah, but I mean, is it a cop personality? Is it somebody who comes from a different background typically?
Well, yeah, it's going to be an officer with law enforcement experience. In fact, we prefer laterals or someone with a few years on because you can bring that wealth of experience for the position.
So other communities have something like this?
Not too many.
Okay.
But certain people, you know, in law enforcement in particular, they just have a way with people or a passion about certain things. And, you can see they're a good fit for certain positions. Might be SWAT, might be something like this, might be both together, depending. But the ability to know that, hey, enforcement can't be the first and only tool we reach for when dealing with the homeless and mentally ill, a compassionate approach that still has accountability for behavior so you can do both sides, but the ability to genuinely care and be, you got to have tremendous patience, but willing to work closely with our, you know, Betty Chin, Brian Hall, and the Eureka Rescue Mission, our stakeholders, DHHS, and social workers and mental health workers with the homeless community, you know, and work together in a team environment and understand the bigger mission.
Is it the homeless community, Steve, or is it the mentally ill community?
Well, over 50% of our homeless have significant mental illness from our own surveys, and that probably is a low number. And so there's a lot of overlap. But CSET has actually become our primary mental health crisis response team during the hours and days that they work in the city. They handled between 30 and 40% of our 5150, so that's person in crisis, danger to themselves or others, or gravely disabled type of calls. They'll come, they'll take over for patrol or assist patrol.
Oh, they'll take a lead position in that kind of response.
And get this, because last year, the ERs became the triage center for all these mental health cases. They spend 3 to 4 hours a day often in there trying to help staff deal with people in crisis because
there's a need.
Not their job, but they're doing it because there's a need and they're feeling it.
And they have the trust.
They have the trust there's and they have the heart for it.
Yeah. Almost like you need to have two of them, huh?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, you didn't pounce on that one nearly as aggressively as I thought you would. Maybe next year, huh?
Because you're holding an object that looks like you're going to throw it at me.
Oh, yeah, it's Nerf balls. Nerf balls and us go way back around here.
See, fill it with water and you get dangerous. Found that out the hard way.
Yeah, all right, fine. We're out of here. See everybody tomorrow.